Hello and welcome to ASAF Music School. I'm so glad that you've decided to join us for this course entitled Conducting. In this course, we will be discussing the basic sign language of a conductor. We'll be learning how to use the proper gestures in the right place. Our job as conductors is to be able to help the people that are participating in a large ensemble of some sort to be confident in what they're doing, unified in what they're doing, able to communicate the message of the song that they're attempting to perform well. And it's the conductor's job to ensure that all these things take place smoothly. If you're not a conductor or a director, this information will still be helpful for you in that a person who knows the basics of conducting is better able to understand what a good conductor is requiring of them when they're singing, when they're playing their instrument. And so learning how to conduct is a wonderful skill, and all musicians ought to be familiar with at least the basics of how to conduct. This course will go into some depth on conducting, and even if you have some experience already and have had some courses already in conducting, I trust that you'll find some things that will help you to become a better conductor, a better director, better able to serve those that you are directing. And so let's take a look at our notes there. Today's lesson, of course, is lesson number one, and the title is Introduction to Conducting. This lesson will be discussing different purposes of conducting and those sorts of things. And we'll jump right in there. Let's take a look at our introduction. The introduction says this: the well-rounded musician should be familiar with and be able to demonstrate the basics of traditional conducting technique. Directors should be able to clearly indicate tempo, volume levels, phrasing, accents, etc. by their gestures. Performers who understand conducting patterns will be able to better understand and follow the gestures of a competent music director. The skills that we'll be learning in this course will be beneficial for musicians all the way around, whether you're going to be in charge or whether you're just going to perform in the group. These skills that we will learn here will be beneficial to you and very helpful to you. And I hope that as we go through here, you will follow along with the exercises and you will learn to better your skills as a conductor. Many times a person who is musical is asked to be in charge, whether or not they feel comfortable with that position or not, just simply because of the fact that they're the only one there that knows anything at all about music. And so learning how to conduct is always a useful skill, and it will help us to understand our music a little bit better, and will help us to be better performers as well. So this will be some wonderful material for you, and I hope that you'll enjoy it just as much as I do. Let's take a look at our notes there. Number one, what are some purposes of conducting? What are some purposes of conducting? Why do we have one person stand up in front of the choir and direct as they sing? Why do we have somebody direct the orchestra? Why can't the group just get together and play? Well, there are some reasons why somebody needs to know how to conduct. Letter A. The conductor helps to provide musical direction and leadership. You see, somebody's got to be in charge. There has to be somebody that's going to be telling everybody what they need to be doing. And this doesn't necessarily mean that the conductor is a better musician. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are a take charge type of person. This just simply means that we can unify the performance by following one person. And it is a position, not necessarily forcing your will upon other people. It is a matter of serving those performers. And you need to think of conducting as being a servant to the people that you're helping to perform the number, whether it's an orchestra or a band or a choir. You need to think of yourself as their servant. You are helping them. You are helping them to feel more comfortable in what they're doing, that they know where they're supposed to come in, where they're supposed to cut off, how loud they're supposed to be performing, how soft they may be asked to perform. All these different things is the job of the conductor as he serves the performers. And so, letter A, the conductor can help provide musical direction and leadership. Letter B, the conductor unifies the musical presentation. The conductor unifies the musical presentation. Whenever you have a group of people, everyone has their own idea of how that music ought to be performed. It's just the nature of people. Everyone's got their own opinion. Everyone has their own idea. And those opinions and those ideas may all be valid. I'm not necessarily saying that the people in there don't know what they're doing. However, if we have one person in charge, we can unify the presentation so that we are presenting a consistent message. What is this song supposed to sound like? How are we going to express this particular phrase? And having a conductor helps us to have a unified presentation. Unity is a biblical concept. You'll find in the Old Testament, when Solomon's temple was dedicated, It states that when the singers were as one, we had singers, there were instrumentalists, and when all these musicians were as one, that then the glory of the Lord came down and filled the temple. There's the idea of unity there. And so a conductor helps to unify, to homogenize, to help the group sound like one unit as opposed to being a group of separate individuals. And when you have a choir, you want it to sound like one group. You want it to sound like one person. You want to have a unified sound. When you have a band or an orchestra, the same thing is true. You want to have a unified presentation. And so the conductor helps do that. Letter C. A conductor helps to interpret the inherent musical expression. Not every musician will look at the dynamic markings, say, or the tempo changes and interpret them the same way. A conductor can help to unify and to make a coherent expression of that particular piece of music. So a conductor helps to interpret the inherent musicality of the piece and can help provide direction to the group and to encourage them to do more or to do less and can keep the volume levels where they need to be and that sort of thing. So a conductor helps to interpret the music as they go through that particular piece. Letter D, the conductor helps to ensure musical variety and vitality. A conductor can help to present the type of energy that needs to be in the piece. The conductor can help make the dynamics larger or smaller, the tempo changes bigger or smaller. And so the conductor is in charge of all these things and needs to be able to present to the performers all these different aspects of music so that the music becomes interesting to listen to. There's variety in it. It's not all just monotone. It's not all the same volume level. It's not always the same tempo. The conductor helps to ensure that the music has variety and some vitality, has some energy to it, so that the people that are listening to it can enjoy it, can get from the message of the music what they need to receive. Letter E, the conductor also helps to encourage musical excellence. Normally the conductor is the one that can help locate and identify problems in the music. Maybe we have some musicians that aren't performing as well as they could be. Well, it's the conductor who can find those areas that need to be worked on and can provide exercises and can provide information and instruction and education to help the musicians in the group to better their skills so that the music becomes even better and becomes more excellent. And this is the purpose of conducting. A conductor is one who stands in front, who knows, who's able to identify these problem areas and can come up with solutions so that the music can be done with as much excellence as possible. These are all purposes of conducting, and that's the responsibility of the conductor. Number two, now that we know the purposes of conducting, let's get into some of the basics of conducting. Number two says posture and stance. How is the conductor to stand? Well, the conductor should stand like a singer. Even if you're directing an orchestra or you're directing a band, the conductor will be standing. And good standing, good posture for singing is the same kind of posture that the conductor ought to have, because if a conductor is standing like a good singer, then he will be standing tall, relaxed, open, expansive. All these sorts of things that are necessary for a person to sing good, they're also necessary for somebody who's playing in an orchestra or playing in a band. These things are also hold true. So you need to stand like a singer. How does a singer stand? Well, you might want to take the course on vocal technique, but just as kind of a basic rundown, a singer should stand with his feet about a foot apart, one foot slightly ahead of the other one. The knees should be relaxed. Your pelvis should be tilted in a little bit. Your rib cage should be held expanded and full. We breathe from our diaphragm. The shoulders should be firmly back and down. Your head should be riding lightly on your neck. Your neck should not be stiff or tight. It should be nice and relaxed. And we relax the jaw here. And the head needs to be chin level with the floor, that sort of thing. So that was kind of a real quick rundown there. Again, you might want to take a look at the vocal technique section of our website to learn more about how a singer should stand. But it's extremely important for a conductor, as he stands in front of a choir especially, to stand like the singers are to stand. You are to be presenting and to be emanating an image of what the singer ought to be doing. And so you will get what you are, not necessarily what you expect, if that makes sense. So you need to make sure that you are standing correctly. So posture and stance. Stand like the singer. Lead the group in standing well. Don't be sloppy in the way you're standing. Number three. The conductor does this. He conducts the pulse or the tact with the right hand, even if you're left-handed. Traditionally, the right hand is used for the main conducting. This doesn't mean that you can't use your left hand. We'll find out later on that the left hand is very important in certain things. But for the main patterns, the right hand is to be used. That's your right hand. If you're facing this video, it would be this hand on this side of you. That is the right hand. You need to use that hand when you're conducting, even if you're left-handed. It may be difficult for you. It just helps to present something that people are more familiar with. If a person goes from one group to another group, then they will be more apt to follow the new director if he's using the same hand, if that makes sense. So always use your right hand, even if you're left-handed. Get used to using your right hand for the main conducting patterns. The letter A. So how do we hold our right hand? There will probably be a variety of opinions on this, and you may have heard somebody say something different. Sometimes people who are choir directors especially, they get a little more flowery with their hand patterns and that sort of thing. But as a general rule, you want to be very clear and very precise. It is not your job to put on a show. Now, I know that in some circles where you have some performers that get paid for what they do, they're trying to put on a performance, they're trying to entertain. In a church setting, which is what this lesson is geared toward, if you're a church choir director or you're conducting a church orchestra, the focal point is not to be on you. And so what we want to do is make our directing patterns very clear, very precise, very pointed, very easy to understand, so that the people that we are serving in our group know exactly what they're supposed to do. We're not trying to get flowery with it. We want to do just what needs to be done to express clearly what we want done. And so with that in mind, letter A, you should hold your hand palm downward when you're conducting. So hold your palm downward. Your fingers should be curved and relaxed. You should have a flexible wrist. Don't be tight and stiff when you're conducting, unless you have a particular effect that you're trying to achieve. Your wrist should be flexible. Letter D, you want to connect your thumb and index finger to create a focal point. If you've seen somebody using a conductor's baton, they will hold the conductor's baton where the base of the baton is in the palm of their hand, and then their index finger and thumb will hold the stick part of the baton, and it creates a nice focal point. A band or an orchestra will be able to follow the end of that stick. Well, as a conductor who's directing a choir, normally we don't use a conductor's baton, but you still want to have a nice focal point. This is too wide and spread out. If you direct like this, it's a little bit more difficult to figure out exactly where the beat is. And so you want to have a nice, clear focal point. You do that by putting your thumb and index finger together, letting your other fingers be nice and relaxed and curved, keep your wrist flexible, and then when you conduct, you'll have this nice, easy focal point that everyone will be able to follow clearly. Again, the point is, we want to be able to communicate to our performers exactly where the beat is so that there's no ambiguity about it. There's no question about where the beat is supposed to be, where they're supposed to start singing, where they're supposed to end. We want it to be nice and clear. So again, let me run through that one more time. Palm downward, fingers curved and relaxed. Have a flexible wrist. Connect your thumb and index finger together to create a nice, clear focal point. Just one note while we're here as well. I'm not going to spend an awful lot of time talking about technique with the baton. However, you might want to be aware of this. Again, the baton is held with the base in the palm of your hand between the index and thumb, your palm downward like this. And you'll want to remember this. When you're conducting with the baton, your left hand, when we start doing some of the expressive things, ought to be level with the tip of the baton. And so you would hold the baton back a little bit and your left hand out a little bit so that they're on the same plane right here. All right, so the tip of the baton and the end of your fingers should be on the same plane this way. And that's what you'll want to do when you're holding baton. We won't spend a lot of time talking about baton technique. That's not really the purpose of these series of lessons. So these lessons are geared more towards choir directing, but the conducting patterns are applicable to band and orchestra as well. All right, so there we go. How do you hold your hand? Just like we discussed. All right, number four. Number four, you'll need to be familiar with the basics of the conducting patterns. Throughout these lessons, we'll be talking about different types of conducting patterns. And as we go through here, you need to be familiar with this terminology, the jargon, if you will, of conducting. Letter A, the preparatory beat. The preparatory beat. The conductor ought to be extremely familiar with the preparatory beat. And the reason is this. The preparatory beat is where the instrumentalists, the choir, will breathe. And as a conductor, you conduct the breaths as you go through the music. So you ought to know how to conduct a preparatory beat. Preparatory beat there, you'll see, it says direct one beat before the performers begin. This beat communicates the tempo. That's how fast or slow the music is going to go. The dynamic level, that's how loud or how soft the music is. And also the style of the music. There's a lot of communication that goes on in that preparatory beat. And it also causes the performers to breathe together. The choir that breathes together sings together. And again, we're striving for unity in our group sound. And so the best way we can do that is by conducting this breath. And that takes place in the preparatory beat. Please notice in the bottom of your outline there, you'll see the little diagram I have of this preparatory beat. It's the curved dotted line going up. Many times that preparatory beat will be on the beat before the main beat. If I'm in 3-4, it'll be on beat 3-3. And so I will actually conduct that preparatory beat. That helps prepare. Again, preparatory just simply means prepare, and we are preparing the group to perform. Letter B, the downbeat. The most important beat that we conduct is the downbeat. This is the first beat of every measure. In most styles of music, in almost all the styles of music that we will be using in churches, the downbeat is the beat that has the most accent to it. And so that downbeat is always very straight, very clear, very definite, and usually very strong. So the downbeat looks like this. It's just a nice straight line on the page there in the diagram. Looks like this. We're just going to draw a straight line in the ear from top to bottom. That's the downbeat. It says on our notes, it's the first beat of each measure. It's indicated by a vertical downward motion directly in front of the director. That's the downbeat. So we have the preparatory beat. We have the downbeat. Another term that you need to know is letter C, the ictus. The ictus. This is a very important part of conducting that some people miss. The ictus is the exact point of the beat. Look what the notes say there, ictus. The precise instant of the rhythmic pulse, sometimes called the beat point. It is indicated by a bounce or a flick of the wrist. The best thing you can do to help your choir stay together is to simply show them exactly where that beat is. And the way that you do that is by showing them this ictus. How do you do that? Letter D, you do the rebound. After you perform the ictus, you bounce off it just a little bit. The rebound. Look at letter D. The upward bounce following the ictus. It should never be more than half the height of the downbeat unless you're directing in one. Very unusual to be directing in one. That simply means you have one beat per measure. It's kind of an unusual setting. It doesn't happen very often in your music. So we have the rebound. So here we go. We have the preparatory beat. We have the downbeat with the ictus, which is indicated by this rebound at the bottom of it. It's almost like there's a little bouncing ball down there. And a lot of times when I teach conducting, I'll say, all right, get your bouncing ball out, and let's make it bounce. Boing! And we have this little bounce at the bottom of our downbeat. That's the rebound. Letter E, we have a cutoff. Here's another term you need to know. The cutoff is just simply when the music is supposed to stop. Letter E, the cutoff, a looping or pinching motion made at the end of a section or piece to indicate the precise moment performers are to cut off the sound. A cutoff usually looks something like this. The hands will be out, and we have this looping, pinching motion to make everybody stop their singing at a precise instant. Sometimes it'll look like this, sometimes it'll look like a loop, sometimes it'll look like this, where we bring our fingers together, we will separate the fingers momentarily, and we'll bring them back together to show that this is where the sound is to end. If you have a very precise consonant, such as a T, you want to make that cutoff nice and precise so that T occurs throughout the group on the same spot. If it's a softer type of a consonant, like an N or an M, you may want to do something a little soft, like a like this, where we bring it together softly and gently, as opposed to a harsher and harder cutoff. But that's your cutoff. Those are, right now we're just trying to discuss some of the basic ideas of conducting. And so these are some terms that you need to be familiar with. By knowing these terms, you'll be able to read the diagrams that we'll be getting into later on. And you'll notice there down the bottom of the page that that's clearly laid out for you. And we'll be discussing those and try to make these just as simple and as clear to understand as we possibly can as we go through this, through these lessons. So as you look at these diagrams, you'll notice that they are the conducting pattern basics. These diagrams will be shown from the conductor's viewpoint. So don't try to make them opposite. If you just take your fingers and kind of trace along the lines in the diagram, then you'll have it going the right direction, and that'll be good. So that's conducting. This is the introduction to conducting. I hope that you're getting excited about the skills that you're going to be learning. Let's do our homework, and we'll learn more about some of the patterns as we come into some of the following lessons. If you look on your outline, we do have a discussion there on this first lesson about leadership and the importance of good, godly, biblical leadership. It's so important in our churches. Dr. Lee Robertson used to say, and was very famous for the saying, everything rises and falls on leadership. We need to make sure that we strive to be good leaders. A good leader, again, is not somebody who simply bosses everyone around. A good leader has learned how to become everyone's servant and knows how to serve them and to help them and to edify others and to encourage them and to be a blessing to them as they serve them. It's not a matter of pride and everybody look at me. It's a matter of how can I help you better? How can I help you as a choir to be better singers? How can I help this musical performance to better communicate the message contained therein? And all these things work together for a wonderful performance. And it's the conductor's job to be a good leader. It's a biblical idea. I have down there the passage in 2 Chronicles 5:13. You'll want to learn that, memorize that. 1 Chronicles 25:6 talks about these folks that were under the hand of their father, and they were under leadership, and there was some good godly leadership going on there. Wonderful thing. And so you need to be familiar with some of these ideas. So I hope this lesson has been a blessing to you as we begin our series of lessons on how to become a good conductor.